I'm going to stand because I'm an alcoholic and I like to be in control. I want to see your faces. My name is Gail. I'm an alcoholic, a member of the Holly Springs group.
Thank you.
My sobriety date is November 27, 1978. My daughter also does therapy with people who are alcoholics. And she told me the other day that there was a man who came in and said that he had 5 years of sobriety, and he had it. He knew what to do. He had all the answers. He knew he wouldn't pick up a drink again. And she said, that's really great. Congratulations. My mother has 39 years and still doesn't know her way out the door. She was the one who told me when I first got in the program. My drinking really wasn't spectacular. I was a very sheltered child. I had two younger sisters, and my family really protected us from everything on the outside. We were not allowed to go to sleepovers. We were not allowed to go to parties. We were not, it was just a very strict family, sheltering family. And I didn't know any different. I just thought that everybody did that. I didn't think about it. And I went to college, and the college was a dry campus. It was in a dry county in Virginia. And again, I really didn't, I had a drink or two of alcohol when I was at home with my parents. I didn't think there was anything exciting. I did like the taste. I liked the taste of it. But, when you only get one drink, for me, that wasn't, at that time, a big deal. I just liked the taste of it. So I went to college, I graduated, had a lot of fun, got good grades, no drinking involved. And then when I got out of college, I said, and I always felt like I was okay until then. Okay, God, thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate all of the help you've given me up to this point. I can take it from here. And I took that little God of my childhood and put him up here on the shelf and just said, I'm sure there is somebody else that needs your help more than I do. I'm sure there's somebody out there that can take your time. And I started teaching in Virginia, in Roanoke County, Virginia. And, of course, I was with a roommate, and she had a lot of friends, and so I started going to parties. And people were kind of coupling up, doubling, and dating, and talking to one another, and I sat in a corner because I did not know how to talk to anybody. I could talk one-on-one to you. I could talk one-on-one to anyone. But to meet somebody I didn't know, especially a boy, there was no way. So somebody said to me, why don't you have a beer? And I said, okay. So I had a beer, and then I had another beer. And it didn't seem to really make a lot of difference until they said, why don't you try something else? So I drank some hard liquor on top of the beer. And then I started talking and dancing and having a good time. Passing out. They had to carry me home. And so I said to myself, well, I'm not going to do that again. I am never going to mix beer and alcohol, beer and hard liquor. Never going to mix them because that's what the problem was. So already, I realized that it did something for me that I couldn't do for myself. But it also was not the ending I was looking for. Because I had a picture of this woman with a really great-looking dress on, nice hair, cigarette holder, drinking a martini with an olive in it. And that's not what I looked like when I finished. I mean, there was nothing that even resembled that. So I went to other parties, and I continued to get drunk. I got to that point where I was really feeling good, and then I tried to chase it. And the more I tried to chase it, the more it ran away from me. So this was just a pattern for a long time. What happened was my parents and I taught for quite a while. I taught in Virginia, and it was there in that area in that time. If you were caught with alcohol as a teacher, you were fired. There was no questions asked. So I was really very careful. My parents retired to Florida. There was a new school opening up in Fort Lauderdale called Inova Elementary Schools, Inova Colleges, Universities, and it was all experimental, was funded by Ford, and the principal asked me if I would like to take part in that because she knew my parents were moving, and I said, yeah, I'd love to. So I got a job down there at Nova. And, you know, things were going well. I was living back with my parents. They didn't drink very much, so I wasn't drinking. But I was so involved with school. I was so involved with learning how to make up curriculum, because they didn't have a curriculum. We had to write our own. And so it kept us really busy. My father took a boating course. He didn't have a boat, but he wanted to take a boating course because he was always interested in that. And he asked me if I would join him. And since he had three girls, I decided I'd help him. And I went to the boating course with him. I think it was two times a week. And it was a power squadron course. And I really got a lot out of it. I enjoyed it. And that's where I met my first husband. And we were married a couple years after that. The problem was, before we got married, I would go to his house, and his father was a very heavy drinker, and he liked to ply me with alcohol. We would play bridge, and we would have a drink, and then when you won, you know, a round, then you had to drink another drink, and then when you won, and of course, that was right up my alley. I just thought that was amazing. I mean, I fell in love with his family, and I went there every night. I taught school, I went there. I taught school, I went there. And so I guess my first husband thought he could change me. I mean, he knew there was a problem, but I think he thought he could change me. So we got married, and since he didn't drink, he was a pilot, I stopped for a while. And then it was time to have my first child. And when I did, I came home. I drank through the whole pregnancy, and she's fine. I don't know how. He kept saying I was pickling her. Doctor said, I said, I only take one beer a day. Yeah, one beer a day and then a couple of bees. I had a child. I brought her home. I didn't know what to do with her. I'd never been around a baby. I had never babysat. I didn't have a clue. And so a friend of mine said, why don't you have a drink in the afternoon? It will calm you down. The baby was colicky. It'll help her feel better. And I said, okay. So I mixed a pitcher of martinis. You know, I didn't take a drink. I mixed a whole pitcher because I just knew that one was not going to be enough. And I did not have a clue about the disease of alcoholism. Did not have a clue. And I drank that pitcher, and yeah, she quieted down quite a bit. And so did I. And when my husband came home, nothing was ready. Dinner wasn't ready. Baby wasn't clean. I looked a mess. And, you know, he berated me a couple of times, and I promised I'd stop drinking and, you know, everything would be okay. So I started sneaking it. And I would hide it in the refrigerator. I'd hide it in the bathroom. I'd hide it anywhere I thought I could and take a little sip here and there. We had a neighbor who was having a dinner party one night, and they invited us over, and I brought a bottle of wine over. And she said, my husband's an alcoholic. He's an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, oh, that's too bad. I mean, then I wanted to take the wine back home, but, you know, I left it there. And I had never, ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really had not. I'm sure that out there somewhere it had crossed my mind, but you know, I wasn't interested in anything like that. This was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Still, so far, I wasn't getting into any trouble. My husband wasn't happy with me, but you know, that's so. I needed to drink. We moved from there into Fort Lauderdale, and I met a lady across the street who loved to drink, and so I would find myself traipsing back and forth. Every day, back and forth, back and forth. And one day I saw her out there in the front yard, and she was just kind of wandering around. And I said, you know, if I get that bad, I'm going to just have to stop drinking. I didn't realize how bad I was. I did not have a clue. So I went back over there one day, and I fell in the middle of the street. And then I tried to get up, and I couldn't. I fell again. Meanwhile, now I have bruises on both sides of my face. And when I came home, I had to tell my husband that a car hit me, because I couldn't tell him I fell in the street, so I had to describe the car, which there wasn't, and he had to spend the next day running around looking for this car. And so I knew then that I was on a merry-go-round that I wasn't going to get off of. But I also did not want to because I didn't know how to, and I was afraid if I did, I would die. And alcohol had become my God. I would pray to that God. I would worship that God. I would go and buy that alcohol and just make that everything. And I always said, when my husband went off to work in the morning, I won't drink today. And I would always end up with, you know, one drink. And I kept filling it, so it was more than one drink. Thanksgiving came and went, and I had spent Thanksgiving sitting under the table, the guests were eating at the table. I was sitting under the table. And the reason I was sitting under the table is because the chair kept moving. I was so dizzy. And so I got under the table, and my husband said, "Why are you under the table?" And I said, "Because it's cooler under here." And so my daughter thought that was great, so she got under the table. Oh, my God. My husband was fit to be tied. So he went out the next day, went to the library, checked out the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And he brought it to me, and he shoved it in my face, and he said, "Read this." So I put it down, and I let it sit for a while. It bothered me that it was there. I kept thinking, he's got to take it back. One day he'll take it back, and I won't see it anymore. And then one day I had the courage to open it up and look at the stories in the back. I couldn't read the front because I couldn't understand the words, because at this point I was signing my name with an X. I would go into the bank, and my hand shook so much, I had to say, "I have arthritis." And, I knew deep down inside, I knew that this was a destructive thing. Just couldn't stop. So I read the stories in the back, and I said, "Oh, my gosh, these people feel like I do." It was the first time I recognized the fact that people felt the way I felt and had to drink to help with those feelings, or to get over them, or to forget them, or to move away from them, or whatever. I closed the book. I didn't do anything for 2 weeks. And I was drinking daily. I mean, I was drinking in the closet. I was drinking out of a bottle. My husband would come in, open the door of the closet, and say, "Are you drinking?" "I'm not drinking." "Why would you ask me that? I'm standing in the closet with a bottle in my hand." I looked outside the window, and he and my daughter were sitting on the dock. We lived on the water. We had a boat hanging there. And they were talking and laughing and enjoying the day. And I was in bed, drunk, just totally drunk. But the next morning when I got up, I was helping my daughter get ready for school. And I poured a glass of scotch. I drank anything. It didn't matter. Scotch was fine, whatever it was. Into a glass, and she walked into the kitchen, and the look in her eyes, it's just like, oh, no. And I knew when I looked at her that I would never see her grow up. I knew that I would die before she did. So I took her to school, and then I picked up the phone and called Alcoholics Anonymous. I called the central office. There was a wonderful woman there who told me where a meeting was. Did I need help getting there? Was there anybody that could pick me up? No, I'm fine. I can do that. It took me quite a while to figure out what to wear because it had to be just right. I mean, I knew that it had to be just right, and I also knew that it had to be something understated so they wouldn't think that I was new. I probably weighed about 80 pounds at this point because all I would do was drink and throw up. And so, you know, yeah, they would know I was new. And I cut all my hair off. You know, it was just because it was too hot to take care of. So I went into the rooms, and, Alcoholics Anonymous, a man under a bridge with a bottle. And I thought, they're going to give me a bridge. They're going to assign me a bridge. And I'm going to get my bottle and my raincoat. I was serious. That's what I thought. And you know what? I was happy. I was glad to do that. You give me that bottle and you give me the bridge, that's fine. I'll do my thing. I'm okay. Well, that's not what they did. There was a gentleman in there, and I thought, oh no, there's a man here. I don't have to talk to a man. the most wonderful man I've ever met. And he said, "You're new."
Yeah.
He said, "Well, come sit down and we'll have a meeting." And then a whole bunch of women showed up and some other men. And at that meeting, the chairman said, "We have a new person here. And I want her to know what it's like when you get sober. I want you to tell us your experiences about being sober." And they went around the room and each one of them talked about laughing, smiling, hugging, playing, partying, celebrations, holidays, without alcohol. Getting a job without alcohol. And, you know, I thought, this is amazing. You know, I was so foggy, but I heard that, and that attracted me. And they said this is a program of attraction, and God seems to know exactly what each person needs when they walk in their rooms. And then we stood up at the end of the meeting, and we joined hands, and we said the Lord's Prayer. And I get goosebumps now, because that was my connection. That was what I had left. That is what I had put on the shelf. That's what I had put out of my life. That is what I had forgotten about. And so I realized that my answer was in God. And it was in these rooms, and it was in you people. And it was not in anything I could do by myself. And they told me not to drink and come to the next meeting, which was that night. They didn't have chips at that meeting, so I didn't get any. The next night, but I went home and I picked up a drink. I didn't drink it. I poured it, and I was going to tell the mailman when he came to the door that I had joined Alcoholics Anonymous, and that I wanted him to be with the drink. I have to laugh at it now when I think about how crazy you can be. I poured the drink out. I didn't drink it. And I went to my next meeting that night, and I picked up a chip. And I heard a lot of things at that meeting, like get a sponsor and 90 meetings in 90 days and don't drink between meetings. And I heard a lot of slogans because I could not think about the stats. Just, I couldn't even read them. But I could keep it simple. And I knew that I was not alone. And I knew that one day at a time and stay in the now, all of those things I could remember. And they said the Serenity Prayer, which I didn't know. So I went home and copied it down and memorized, kept reading it and reading and reading it to memorize it. Because I was afraid if I didn't know it, you would find out and then I couldn't stay. I mean, really serious about that. So when I got in my car that night, I thought to myself, you know, if this doesn't work, I'm just going to go home. And I have bottles hidden. I know where they are. So if this doesn't work, I'll have that to fall back on. And out of the back of my car, where there was nobody, came a voice that said, "This is it. No more chances. Go home, Gail." And dumped that out. Scared the crap out of me. There was nobody back there. I know that was God getting my attention. So I did. I went home and told my husband where they were, and he got them all out, and he dumped everything out. It was the most amazing journey it has been that I've been on. My first husband did not like me sober because he couldn't control me. He knew where I was when I was drinking. He knew he had like two children to take care of. He had me and he had my daughter. And I was now going out every night to go to meetings. I went to meetings 3 times a day for 2 years, 7 days a week. Because I really was that sick. I was afraid that if I went out of the room and I couldn't remember it, that it would all go away and you would be all gone. So it was like a dream and I didn't want to wake up from this dream. And so I went to a lot of meetings and I learned a lot of things. They told me, first of all, for the first 90 days, to keep my mouth shut, that I didn't have anything to share. I had nothing to share. I didn't know how to stay sober. They also told me to get a sponsor now. So I found somebody and got one now and used them. They told me to join a group now. So I joined a group. They told me to get active in the program now. And I did it. And the reason I did those things is because those people, this was in the 101 Club in Pompano Beach, Those people were tough. They were old-timers. They learned it the old-timer way, and everybody that came in there got that, and that was the message. And I was afraid not to do what they asked me to do because I knew my own way didn't work. But something happened in their way because they were sober, and I wasn't. So I did. I listened. I got a sponsor. I joined a group, and then I didn't like the group after I joined it, and so I asked my sponsor to tell them I didn't want to be in that group. No, if you want to join another group, you tell them you don't have somebody else do it for you. See, I've always had somebody do something for me, so I didn't. So I had to go tell them, and you know what? Nothing happened. They said, okay, fine. It was the beginning of me stepping out of my shell and into the role of a human being again. I used to clean ashtrays. I'd mop floors. I'd wipe tables. They had a lunch there once a week, and they told us to volunteer to do that. And so a friend of mine and I cooked hot dogs and baked beans one time. And we were busy talking, not paying attention. Hot dogs exploded all over the kitchen. And you know what she said? They'll eat anything. And she's right. They don't care. They're just happy to be served something. They had, in November, they had a gratitude dinner. And it's gratitude month down there. And I went to the gratitude dinner. I had never heard anything about it. I didn't know what to do. So I said, okay, what do I do? She said, you stand here and you greet everybody that comes in the door. Oh, my God. I had no clue how to do that. But I watched her, and I started doing that. You know, I had more fun than I ever thought I would have. It was amazing. My marriage lasted 7 years in sobriety. My sponsor knew that I wanted to get a divorce because he was not happy with me. But she told me I had to stay there until I had enough time and done enough of the steps to know that I can be the best wife I can be, the best mother I can be, the best AA member I can be. And it was not easy, but she said, you do it one day at a time. And I stayed there doing the best that I could. And then when I was ready to leave, I asked for divorce and I did not drink. I stayed through all of that and went through all of the commotion that goes with that and the moving out and all that and did not pick up a drink. Right after that, I had met someone in the program who I was very drawn to because of his spirituality. And he and I used to spend a lot of time talking about God and spiritual things. And we also talked about the program. And I think we went to therapy and they said that a lot of people in AA that get married to other AA people, it usually doesn't work out. And I said, this one's going to work. And you know why? Because I didn't know how to be in a relationship. I had no clue. I had never been in a healthy relationship. And this was a little classroom for me of learning how to be in a relationship. And Jim and I learned together how to be in a marriage. He was divorced also. And he and I learned how to put a relationship together that was fun. And we had a lot of fun. And we did a lot of things together. And he went to meetings. He went to his own meetings. Sometimes I went to meetings with him. I went to my own meetings. It was a great relationship. It really was. And he passed away in January. And, you know, I find myself thinking of things I need to ask him. But I know that that was one of the most wonderful lessons for me. But it plopped me right into a situation in my home with my family. I live with my daughter and her husband and two grandchildren. And in the years that we lived in the basement, I never really came upstairs to see what went on up there. And so now, with my husband not there, I had to kind of jump into this family. And it was really hard. Really, really, really hard. I was going through mourning. They were going through their own kind of mourning. But I didn't think that. I thought they should have been kinder to me. And the ego that says, you know, this, look what I've lost, and don't you know how hard it is? And I said to my daughter the other day, The day that I stood there in the hallway and cried because I thought I was going to die after Jim died, you didn't even do anything. You just sat there and looked at me. And I said, and I know why. Because you couldn't do anything. Because you were mourning yourself. This was her stepdad. My first husband died of the same disease that Jim died from. So she had already gone through that once. And now she was going through it again. What has happened in this whole thing is that now this is my classroom. And God is giving me the tools to help me learn how to be in this family and how to function in this family without being in the way. Because, see, I'm the grandmother, so I should have all this wisdom, and they should come to me with this wisdom. Ask me for help, and they don't. They're very different. But I'm okay. I'm really okay with that. It's really great, because they go their way, I go my way, and every once in a while she'll say, oh, would you take so-and-so swimming lessons or something? Okay, fine, if I can, I will. I've learned how to teach them how to treat me today, rather than getting down on the floor and saying, here, just walk on me. And it's something that I had to learn. My daughter and I have always had a good relationship, but when she married, it changed a lot, which is supposed to, but I had trouble dealing with that. Now I realize that she has her own entirely different life. And I'm from the dark ages. I mean, the stuff they do today, I'm not even familiar with. Really and truly, the music they listen to, and that's fine. But I don't have to involve myself in any of that. I can go into my room. I can go downstairs. I can go other places. I go to meetings. I'm going to a bereavement group also once a week, which has really been a big help because I've met some wonderful ladies there. But sobriety to me, I got up this morning in a really bad mood because I was worried about finances. I have to live on so very, very little now. And it's scaring me to death. So it made me feel uncomfortable. It made me feel depressed. It made me feel angry. And so I thought to myself, you better start this day over again. You can't go to that meeting and speak with this mood. I made a gratitude list out. I asked God for help. I spoke with my daughter about it just to kind of hear myself say it. I know, and I felt better, but I know that just because I have a certain number of years of sobriety doesn't mean that everything is joyous, happy, and free, flowers and daisies and things all the time. Life happens. The bottom line is I do not have to drink when life happens. I stayed with my husband for 2 years while he was going through the illness. And the last couple of weeks when he was so very sick, day and night, I didn't pick up a drink. I didn't even think about picking up a drink. Thought about sleeping sometime. But I didn't have to pick up a drink. I was administering drugs to him that he had to have for the pain. Never once crossed my mind to take any of those. You know, it's a miracle what this program does, and God is in charge. And if I let him be in charge, I know that I'm going to stay sober the rest of today. And if anybody got up before 8 o'clock this morning, you have a little more sobriety than I do, because it is just a day at a time. I hope I've spoken long enough.
Two more minutes.
No. All right.